Hello, welcome to this week's At Any Rate podcast. My name is Patrick Locke, FX Strategy out of New York. Joined with me today is James Nelligan out of London and my colleague here in New York, Ladislav Yankovic. You know, this week, ranges, I'd say, on net for the FX space, you know, still seem relatively contained. But, you know, that being said, it did still feel like a pretty important week. And I think, you know, a lot of the things, the cross currents that we've been evaluating in recent weeks were all kind of on display this week. So, you know, to start, I thought we had a pretty big spike in U.S. yields kind of to begin the week on the back of the kind of the holiday weekend, despite not a whole lot new from Chair Powell and what I would call, you know, mixed to decent data out of the U.S. So, you know, a reasonably decent spike kind of in that space. Importantly, we saw some important global growth momentum indicators come in relatively strong. You know, the global growth PMIs in particular kind of continue their 5-month uptrend in general. And that's happening kind of in coordination with more of a pronounced spike in the commodities complex recently. And of course, we had Brent eclipse $90 this week. So those two factors starting to co-move, you know, for the first time perhaps in some time. And, you know, not surprisingly, at least, you know, before this morning ahead of payrolls, you had currencies like Aussie and Norway performing, which, you know, on paper, I think makes sense. You know, but nevertheless, the dollar has kind of held its ground on the whole and certainly got a boost today after payrolls, which was then followed up by what I thought was a relatively punchy comment from the Fed's Lori Logan, saying it's much too soon to be thinking about cutting. And really, I think that was kind of the context or the framework in which to view the payrolls data today. Whereas in the last couple of months, it seemed like maybe there were, you know, the data was a little bit harder to interpret in some cases, you know, on the one hand, strong establishment growth, but weak household employment data, sending mixed signals between, you know, jobs creation and a higher unemployment rate. Everything was kind of moving more in one direction today. So a strong headline beat, but, you know, unemployment ticking down, wages still relatively firm, hours also firm. So really, when you look at that data, it kind of suggests that there's not a whole lot of weakness evidenced in the labor market. And it does make one wonder, you know, just to, you know, once again, how much really can the Fed be easing? And I think it's been interesting, something we evaluate in the weekly this week is, you know, using interest rate derivatives pricing. What is the actual distribution of potential Fed outcomes you know, through the rest of this year? And whereas a couple months, that distribution was extremely narrow and very concentrated in the area of kind of that 3 to 5 cuts, it's much more wider. The market's apparently much more open-minded. Like, yes, we've based kind of around 3 cuts in OIS pricing, but that belies a pretty wide distribution that still has a decent probability going for unchanged and potentially even one hike. And that to me is all consistent with, you know, dollar resilience. And again, we saw that naturally on the back of the release today. But again, in an environment of strong carry, higher yields, strong activity data out of the US, and perhaps, you know, kind of renewed US cyclical divergence, I guess you could say, when you look at kind of the payrolls data today against Canada, for example, it does make sense that the dollar should ultimately, you know, remain bid and resilient. So with that, we kind of maintain our overall constructive dollar bias as we head into a key week next week, which will feature the CPIs. So maybe turning to you first, James, you know, with the dollar more resilient than would usually be the case, I would argue, given kind of the upturn in PMIs that I expected or that I kind of explained, are there any kind of alternative currencies in your space, you know, that you can kind of leverage or trade around in that world?
Thanks, Patrick. Yeah, so I think part of that constraint on the dollar that you mentioned amidst the better global growth environment is what's going on with other currencies as well. You have the likes of the MOF in Japan limiting yen weakness, and of course we know that when global growth improves, the yen tends to weaken. And then there's also tariff risks on the horizon for the euro, so limiting the euro's ability to appreciate on global growth. So I think that has to all factor in to the resiliency of the dollar in that environment. So really, you zoom out, and there's only really a few anti-cyclical currencies that you have in G10 space. It's really just the dollar, the yen, and the Swiss franc. And two of those as we've laid out, are less able to depreciate on better global growth this year. So it really only leaves you with the Swiss franc if you're looking at the anti-cyclical space. And you of course have a central bank there in the SMB that do want currency weakness, very much the opposite to Japan. And on our models, the Swiss trade weighted index is running around 4% rich to global growth. When you're thinking about, you know, the scope for a potential move, if you're more positive on global growth, and much of that divergence comes from SMB intervention last year to buy the franc. And on the global front, as Patrick mentioned there, we saw some more positive signs this week in the internals of the global PMI. And our leading indicators are actually suggesting that that's actually just getting going, and the manufacturing PMI could actually head up towards 54, 55 area before the end of the year, which would obviously encourage the move a bit further and maybe make Swiss stand out a bit more on those kind of growth models. But on the domestic front for Swiss, we've been kind of downplaying the importance of SMB rate cuts or FX intervention, but actually, on both fronts, you've seen surprises there this week. We got a pretty large undershoot on Swiss inflation. And today's S&B FX reserves data showed more intervention than March for February. So the domestic drivers there are clearly in play as well. And we do think from here, even with positioning short Swiss, you can see further depreciation. The other notable price action, turning back to you, Patrick, this week was the ongoing upturn in commodities with Brent breaking $90. And Patrick, you've looked at dollar sensitivity to oil and how that's evolved over time. Should the dollar be concerned with both global growth and commodities on the rise here?
Yeah, thanks. I mean, thinking about the dollar and commodities and global growth from kind of a 10, 15, 20-year heuristic, you know, the dollar was pronounced kind of negative correlation to those two factors, especially during kind of the peak of the super cycle. And it made sense because, you know, the dollar is inherently an anti-cyclical asset, and to the extent that global growth was helping to boost prices back then, you know, it made sense that the dollar would display kind of like a very strong negative relationship with things like oil prices. But we find that, you know, a lot has really changed in this current cycle. You know, just for starters, like the dollar does maintain a pretty decent positive correlation with oil over last year. And I think that reflects two things. One, obviously kind of what, you know, higher oil prices mean for inflation expectations, given the new kind of inflationary paradigm that we're in. But secondly, and importantly, I think that, you know, supply considerations have been kind of a paramount focus so far this cycle, you know, certainly since 2022, and not even just immediately after the war, but also kind of, you know, during the spike, the run up in Brent that we had to $95 in the third quarter of last year. And I think kind of like disentangling the supply versus demand driven price increases does matter for the FX interpretation for the dollar, because, you know, the way I kind of see it is that if it's a supply driven shock higher, and in that case, basically, you're looking at a potential spike in inflation, purchasing power squeeze, it's inherently anti-cyclical. And not surprisingly, you know, we find that the relationship between the Bloomberg Commodity Index and our global growth FRIs has actually flipped negative over the last 2 years, despite having a positive correlation in the past. And that's good for the dollar because obviously the dollar has been positively geared towards inflation developments this year, given kind of the Fed reaction in rates, but also because it's an anti-cyclical asset. And again, if you perceive kind of like a supply shock, higher price, you know, through the lens of a purchasing power squeeze, it's inherently, you know, negative for global growth. And our commodity colleagues, I should flag, have recently published the risks of Brent returning to $100, given recent production decisions out of Russia and potentially more scope for OPEC to extend their current curtailments. And so in that respect, it does feel like a potential run up to $100 would be more of a dollar positive scenario overall from this framework than a dollar negative. Then I would add as well that, you know, we kind of do a bit of exploration on the current U.S. balance of payments to see, you know, how much that can explain in terms of dollar sensitivity as well. And the reality is that, you know, most people, I think, understand that, you know, U.S. oil production has increased significantly. The energy trade balance is now effectively flat. And if you look at kind of the, you know, the contribution from oil and gas to overall imports from the U.S., that does track basically the dollar's rolling beta to oil. So basically, as that trade deficit has narrowed, the energy trade deficit has narrowed, you know, the dollar's negative correlation to oil has also fallen. So I think that also helps explain why the dollar should generally be more resilient this time around, given these kind of, you know, structural developments as well. So bottom line, I think, is that the dollar is going to be resilient, if not potentially a little bit stronger, if Brent goes all the way to $100 from here.
Thanks, Patrick. Yeah, very much agreed on that. We've also spoken, obviously, about U.S. payrolls today, but perhaps just as noteworthy was the Canadian employment report in terms of your bearish CAD view. Are you encouraged there?
Thanks. Yes, I am. You know, for a long time, we've been expecting more obvious kind of like cyclical divergence between Canada and the U.S., and in particular, enough of a wedge there to kind of ultimately drive a little bit more daylight between kind of the Fed and the BOC reaction functions. And so it seems like, you know, in the last few weeks, you started to have kind of renewed evidence of that. You know, last year in the second half, yes, Canadian growth was slow, but inflation was still relatively sticky. And so the BOC wasn't really going to give you much in terms of kind of like a dovish pivot back then, just because they were relatively more cautious. And certainly, you know, the Fed seemed to come out a little bit more dovish than expected at a couple points. So that didn't do much in terms of kind of like relative rates pricing, in my estimation. But since then, in the last month, we've had a very significant undershoot in the inflation data, core data really, you know, I think screening it kind of around target for the BOC. And then today, yes, you know, relative to the US 300K print, Canada's payroll slightly contracted. It was a meaningful move higher, three ticks in the unemployment rate. So once again, it does feel like, in a broad sense, you're starting to see more evidence of kind of Canadian cyclical weakness or slowdowns, at least relative to the US. And again, I think that should sponsor dollar CAD upside ultimately. And so all this matters because, you know, we got the BOC April NPR report next week where they refresh their forecasts. And importantly, that kind of, you know, precedes the June meeting in which, you know, we formally forecast the BOC to cut. Whereas I mentioned at the outset, you know, markets very actively reconsidering kind of the potential path and the scope from the Fed side. So it does feel like this is finally kind of the time when maybe you can get a little bit more dollar CAD upside, a little bit more broad CAD underperformance, you know, just as these kind of like cyclical developments, you know, potentially give the BOC some room to come out a little bit more dovish next week ahead of a June's. So not surprising to see at the end of the day that CAD has underperformed, you know, the entire G10 space today. To your point, yes, that is encouraging. I'm not going to overinterpret one print, but I think generally speaking, you know, the flow of data, both domestically and relative to the U.S., I think are encouraging for kind of that, you know, that divergence view. But maybe turning it back to you, Ladd, you know, you focus on the vol space. Vols obviously remain depressed at the moment. But are there any kind of dislocations in the vol space that stand out to you that are worth exploiting?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Bud. Yes, so the vol's been kind of quite subdued, and we've been really blaming the spot mean reversion on at least part of it. At this stage, the FX vols look to be undershooting the rates vols by about one vol point. Not really clear what kind of catalyst could really kick them in a higher gear and help closing that gap. At this point, it seems to be closing actually from the rates vol side to a degree. On the other hand, some of the short-term FX vol models that we are running, they are keeping strong defensive lean. It's just been pretty hard to hold on to those type of positions. One thing that seems to be getting into focus again is inflation. Print next week, we did see a little bit of a boost in the event risk premium pricing for that. The pricing at this stage is about close to the top of the 1-year range. The other thing that is quite notable in the FX vol space is that dollar skews seem to be performing, and that's really just highlighting that fate of dollar and FX vols is pretty linked. From the point of dislocations, just briefly, so with the S&P surprise a couple of weeks ago, and really Swiss cross vols been one pocket that's been performing, we think that actually that leg of trades does have is of interest. So Swiss cross vol versus Euro cross vol, vol type of spreads look pretty promising, especially when we look at the trailing performance. Dollar yen 152 level is again interesting. In a way, like the question is almost not when. The question is basically not really if, but really when that level can be broken. And top side digital calendars continue to carry pretty well. So we think that essentially, like, you can get about like 65% discount on those type of positions, and they definitely look interesting for basically positioning for dollar yen going higher. Within the Asia EM, there is a couple of dislocations, dollar INR and dollar CNH. They are pretty much at the opposite ends of the vol curve steepness, with INR curve flatness seeming as a dislocation that should correct, and definitely makes your INR DG put calendars pretty interesting. For the long end, the dollar CNH vols, again, they were lifted by the high fixings a couple of weeks ago. And at this stage, that looks vulnerable. Back to you, Pat.
Thanks very much, Lad. We'll leave it there for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please refer to JP Morgan research reports related to its content for more information, including important disclosures. 2024 JP Morgan Chase & Company, all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on April 5th, 2024.